You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome into the 20th iteration of the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Craycraft, and I'm joined as always by Dante. How have you been, Dante? We haven't talked in some time.
Yeah, it's been way too long, actually. I've been pretty good. I just saw that Darrell Revis got released, so I'm probably not going to be walking around the New York City streets tonight, but things are good here.
Were you expecting to see him tonight, just walking around?
I don't know. Can you really account for his actions anymore? Not really.
Yeah, no. If you see him, you may as well just see him in jail. And today we have a guest for the first half of the show. His name is Lior Kozai. He was on one of our previous episodes talking Raptors, but today we'll broaden the spectrum a bit and talk all of the East Coast. And then once he hops off the line, it'll just be lonely Dante and I just talking about the West Coast. But let's get started right there in the Eastern Conference, where there was some pretty breaking news yesterday regarding the Toronto Raptors playoff seeding aspirations, and that's that Kyle Lowry is going to be out 4 to 5 weeks after he gets wrist surgery to remove loose bodies from his right wrist, and he is hoping to return maybe a few games before the playoffs get rolling and then get into form for when Toronto makes their playoff push now that they have all of their troops in order with Ibaka and PJ Tucker and the rest of the group. So Lior, I'll start with you. How does this injury affect the Raptors, and what does it mean going forward?
Before the trade deadline, I would have been terrified by this. I mean, the defense was kind of out of whack, and Lowry was just doing everything. But DeRozan, after his injury, has kind of gotten back on track. He's as good as he's ever been, and these last three games without Lowry, they've been pretty good. So, I mean, it's a terrible thing, and it's going to slow them down before the playoffs. But at the same time, I can see at least them holding on, because that defense is going to be really boosted by the trade deadline acquisitions.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing for me, is that they're going to kind of have to slow their roll a bit and really kind of lose their shot at a first round or the first seed of the East. I think that, you know, looking at their home road splits and seeing that they're only 15-14 on the road, at least in my mind, that's the most concerning part, because it does seem like Lowry will be back before the regular season is even over, and he'll get to play a couple games to kind of get ready. But at the same time, how much footing will they lose in the East while he's not there?
Yeah, and offensively, I think it does have an effect on this team, as I believe Corey Joseph will slide into the starting lineup. Is that correct, Lior?
Yeah, he's been starting since Lowry went down.
Yeah,
yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that how this team might have to play more team-oriented. They play a lot of iso ball late in shot clock, and I think that might go away when DeRozan isn't feeling it or if he's not on the floor.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be a team effort. I mean, they need it to be. But I will say that their schedule is pretty light. It's, I think, was ranked 25th or something in the league, one of the easiest schedules in the league for the rest of the season. So that will help them a lot. But yeah, I mean, you can't really get around your best player getting hurt, of course.
Right. And one thing that a couple of guys on the site's group chat brought up that I hadn't really noticed is that the Raptors allowed him, even knowing that he was injured, to still participate in the three-point shootout and the All-Star game, which I think is very, very auspicious. Just that even the three-point contest, you're flicking your wrist a heck of a lot. So I think that's certainly a questionable decision, and I think we might hear more about that as the season goes on.
I think they handled it badly, and especially with the media. I mean, they didn't really say anything. They acted like it was kind of nothing, and then obviously it's not. But at the same time, I don't know if that made that big a difference, just because, I mean, if you need surgery, you're probably going to need it either way. Certainly didn't help, but I don't think it was the worst thing ever. But yeah, I mean, I
but
think
like,
either way he's getting the
why
surgery.
Would you even risk it, you know, if
yeah,
you know that he's...
I agree, though. I do agree
yeah, well,
with you on
I,
that
I think,
part.
I think it sounds a lot like a team that knew they were going to make deals at the deadline or deals around the deadline. Knowing that you have Serge Ibaka, knowing that you're getting that you have the chance to land someone like PJ Tucker during that period of time, maybe gave them some type of reason to be like, "Hey, listen, I think we get a little time to show face as an organization. We get to show people we have two all-stars, and no one can really just can kid around with us anymore. We're legit."
Well, yeah, and I think that's actually a really good point, because if you're the Suns or the Magic in those trades, and you know Kyle Lowry is hurt, you could use that as leverage that this team needs more help to try and stay in that top three in the East or so.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
a good
that,
point, too.
That's probably the best way to look at that. I can't imagine that they went into it with any malicious intent or expecting that, you know, this will be some kind of damage to Kyle Lowry going in, knowing that he's probably already going to have surgery. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, I think this brings us to what we're kind of focusing on, and that's just we're going to do conference resets for both conferences, just meaning just checking out on where teams are, where we expect teams to finish, and how this, I guess, last third of the season, how we expect it to finish out. So I think starting is where we kind of think the Cavs, the Celtics, the Raptors, and the Wizards, who I think are all are certainly the top four teams in most people's eyes in this conference, where we think they'll finish in terms of seeding and how that'll affect the playoff race, whether it's Boston getting the 2 seed and having that road game 7 in the second round of the playoffs, and how all that's going to be affected, and just whether Boston's lack of a deal, which we hadn't gotten a chance to talk about, and I don't want to delve too deep into that because everyone's broken that down at this point, but just how things are going to shape out in the top 4 seeds in the East.
I mean, I think Cleveland is pretty much solidified as the number one. They're 4 games out of Boston. I think between those 3 seeds, I mean, Toronto, without Lowry, it's going to be tough, but depending, just because of how easy their schedule is and how good their defense looks right now, I think they can at least stay in contention for the 3 seed and maybe even the 2 seed. But I would definitely favor Boston for the 2 seed, and those 3 and 4 seeds, I think, are up for debate between Toronto and Washington.
Yeah, I'd probably just give the nod to Washington just because, one, how Wall is playing right now. I don't know if there's really anyone that can stop this guy. He's kind of on a tear right now. And secondly, that they've made some of the necessary pickups that I think that they were really lacking in terms of production from their bench. That, you know, today signing Brandon Jennings, a recently waived Nick, as well as making that trade for Bogdanovich from the Nets, and I thank them for that first round pick. But the real thing here is that Washington is able to really solidify that bench that was such a clear sore spot for them. And while the rest of their starting lineup has really thrived and improved throughout the year, now that they do have some form of offense coming off that bench, I'd be shocked if they didn't finish in the third, to be honest.
Wow, that's bold. You're staking your claim as you feel like you already have this all figured out. We don't even need to play the last 27 games or whatever there are left.
I mean, they call me Nostradante for a reason, but
oh jeez.
But I'm feeling pretty good about Wall and Beal in that 3 spot. And again, going back to this home road split again, this is a team that needs to be home in games. They're 10-15 on the road and 24-8 at home. It's just such a clear difference for them that they need to be in front of their Washington fans.
Yeah, that's an excellent point on those home road splits, and I tend to agree. I think once we had that podcast talking about the Raptors, all of their kind of problems came to fruition, and the trades kind of helped them back, but now Lowry kind of drops them back again, the Lowry injury. So I think this team will ultimately finish in the 4 seed, which I don't know how bad of a thing that really is, because either way you have to face Cleveland, and this just happens, you get them like a week or 2 weeks earlier. So you're either going to be able to beat them or you're not going to be able to. But a Washington Celtics semifinals of the conference series. That sounds very intriguing to me personally.
Yeah, I think no matter how it shakes out, that 2-3 series is going to be a hell of a series. I mean, I think Toronto kind of has Boston's number because they just don't have a place to hide Isaiah Thomas on defense. And whether it's DeRozan or Lowry, it's always just going to be about finding him and bullying him, just like the Cavs did to Curry in the finals. So I would say with Boston, I think Toronto has that edge. But if it's Boston-Washington, I think that's kind of up for grabs. Both those teams can kind of take advantage of each other's weaknesses. And if it comes down to Toronto-Washington, I mean, the Wizards have shown they have Toronto's number. Wall, right. They just have no answer for Wall, and they swept them in the playoffs 2 years ago. So I don't think Toronto would like that matchup. But as you guys said, I guess Boston and Washington is probably what we're going to see because of this Lowry injury.
Well, I was just going to – I guess this is somewhat of a transition and maybe what you were going to be going towards. But, you know, we're talking a lot about where these three teams are going to finish out from 2-4. But I think it's even more important for these teams where 5-8 finish, and who are those teams. And if those teams get hot, how could Detroit affect Boston? I think we talked about this a little bit last time. There are certain teams out there that can really make a team like Boston worry. If say they had to go against Drummond for you know 5-6 games, whatever it may be. But I think considering maybe the end of this Eastern Conference is also something for some of these teams like the Wizards or even the Raptors to consider and where they want to finish.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to bring up. First of all, I don't think that this has much warrant to, but is there any chance that Atlanta maybe jumps whoever's in that 4 seed, or do we just think there's no chance of that?
I think there's a chance they could jump Toronto, but I do think the Raptors will be able to hang on. I mean, just Atlanta, like, we know what they are. They're not really improving. They're just there, you know? They're a good team, but I think they're kind of stuck in that 5 seed just because Toronto's more talented than them. I mean, even without Lowry, they're still just top to bottom a deeper team, probably better built for the regular season even.
Yeah, and I think that's probably it. For some reason, I'm not as concerned with Atlanta and Indiana, two teams that I think are pretty much locks to make the playoffs this year in my mind. But some of these other teams, you know, the Bucks and the Hornets, who have kind of reeled lately, but you know, could ultimately end up back in a playoff spot. They could end up being teams that really affect how the higher seeds face their first round matchups.
Well, I think for the Raptors, the team that I think you almost want to see is the Hawks. I don't think they pose as many problems as some other teams. Maybe you think there are some more in-depth issues, but then if you're the Celtics, I think you don't want to face a team like Atlanta or Miami or Detroit, who has that big brute center who can out-rebound a guy like Horford, that's kind of always been his weak spot. Although a team like Detroit doesn't scare me very much, but we can get into them shortly. But yeah, overall, the matchups in those 5-8 seeds is kind of going to be the most interesting part of the Eastern Conference race, as long as Toronto doesn't completely have the bottom fall out on them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's all about matchups. Like, we know Toronto doesn't want to play Chicago. Boston, as you mentioned, I mean, they don't want to play a big athletic center because I think Horford would just get manhandled. So, I mean, it's all going to depend. I think Washington, really, their biggest strength is that they can kind of match up with anybody. You know, they've got a really strong backcourt. They've got maybe the best backcourt in the East. And then their frontcourt is playing fantastic as well. I mean, Morris has had a career year, and Porter's been fantastic. So they've kind of got the most, definitely the best starting lineup, they've got the most kind of well-rounded starting lineup. And then their bench, it is what it is, but they did add Jennings, as Dante mentioned, and Bogdanovich. So they did shore it up a little bit.
I think if I'm the Celtics, the team, you know, any team not named Chicago or Charlotte kind of worries me. Just because, I mean, all the talk has just been how poor the interior defense is. And then they just stood pat at the deadline. They lost out on Bogut today. And they really do have a Hassan Whiteside-sized hole in that middle, in the paint. So, you know, I think ideally right now this is great for them. They end up with Chicago, who's the 7 seed right now, and you can really, really bully them in a lot of different ways if you're Boston. But
yeah, otherwise, I think that's an excellent matchup for Boston. And then I'm not too scared of Indiana. I don't think Miles Turner's that physical of a presence quite yet. So I think that might be good for them, but we've already kind of highlighted who we don't expect them to match up well against. And then I think as we start to look at which teams actually end up making the playoffs is quite an interesting discussion, because the Detroit's 2 games out of 7 behind Chicago, but then Miami and Milwaukee are both 1.5 games out, and then Charlotte is not too far back with 3 games out of the 8 seed. So I think those kind of 4 teams are in the race for the 8 seed, and barring a surprising Knicks run, which I don't know why we have anything positive to say about the Knicks at this point, but I know at least for Dante and I, Miami, more so Milwaukee and Charlotte are two of the teams that we almost love more than any team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah,
I mean, it was really frustrating to see Charlotte also not really do anything to move the needle as much as they probably should have.
I don't know about Charlotte. I mean, Walker has been so good, but they've just kind of fallen flat, and they don't really have any big men to bully other teams. They don't really have that inside presence, and they just kind of stagnated from last year while other teams improved. So I don't think Charlotte's making the playoffs, but Milwaukee, I think, even though Parker went down with Middleton and Giannis, I think they can really challenge any team in the East besides Cleveland. They can kind of present matchup problems because you just don't know who to guard. They're just so lanky and athletic.
My excitement for Milwaukee is kind of dimmed at this moment, even though I was the guy who was saying how much better Middleton fits next to Giannis than Parker. I wrote a whole piece on it even. So I'm not as excited about them as I once was, but I guess they could make a run and get the 8 seed. But them against Cleveland, I don't know how much that really excites me. I don't think anyone against Cleveland, unless Love's out for a while or another injury occurs, is really that exciting to me, because once it gets down to it, Cleveland's just going to spread you out and have LeBron go right at you. And if you can't stop him, then he's going to kick it to 4 ridiculous shooters. So I'm not too enthused in a Cleveland series. It's the other kind of 5 through 7s that really interest me. And I'm not sure who ends up squeaking in to get bullied by Cleveland in early to late May.
I agree, but I do want to see Giannis against LeBron. I mean, from what we've seen in the regular season, I think Bill Simmons wrote it. He just goes with no fear against LeBron. Like, you don't see people just attack LeBron and really challenge him. And it's like he thinks he's better than LeBron. Like, we know he's probably a top 15 or so player in the league, but he's just going right at that defense. So I think it would at least be an entertaining series, but yeah, we know they're not really, the 8 seed is kind of like, it's a sweep. Like, it's not really going to be that relevant.
I think that Giannis, I want to see Giannis in a playoff series just to see how he adapts to defenses adapting to him. I think that's a very interesting storyline.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. And I think overall Milwaukee is still a very interesting team. They'll have Middleton back by the end of the year, and I think they could cause some issues for Cleveland in just in the way that they play kind of a positionless ball. But I mean, it's Cleveland, and Cleveland's only going to get better as the season goes on, as they get people back from injuries and as they put these new pieces into rotation on a consistent basis. I think we're going to get to a point where we're like, wow, this team could not only, I mean, obviously they've always been able to compete, but they could almost neutralize any type of difficult effort from the Warriors, and I think that's obviously who you compare them to at this point, not even considering anyone else in the East.
Yeah, the Cavs, I think my interest in my kind of thoughts on them kind of wane. They have their moments where I'm like, wow, this team is maybe even above the Warriors. But then I have times where I'm like, if this team gets out of the East, they're not going to pose a huge threat with Durant on the Warriors. So I think that how they kind of round into form come April is going to be one of the more interesting storylines going forward.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's all about, with Cleveland, every move they make is with Golden State in mind. So they just signed Bogut. I mean, that's Golden State's guy. They pulled the Varejao. So, a reverse Varejao, I should say. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're gonna use the same strategy as last year. They're gonna go big. They're gonna bully them on the boards. And LeBron is LeBron. And it's gonna be tough with Durant, of course, but I think that series, no matter how you break it down, I can't see it going less than six if that is our finals this year.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of what everyone's been waiting for, and we have plenty of months to break that down. But if you guys had to choose your team to nab that eight seed, who do you choose out of kind of the four listed, unless you think someone ends up jumping Chicago, which would be quite the surprise?
I'd probably stick with Detroit as of now. I think it's a team that still may be figuring itself out a bit. Obviously, they weren't able to get rid of Reggie Jackson as they probably would have liked to. But I think they'll figure out how to use him in the best way possible, maybe not to his greatest pleasure. But it's a team coached by a really, really intelligent basketball guy in Stan Van Gundy, and they do have legitimate talent. Perhaps bringing Jackson and Harris off the bench is the move for them, but you know it is a solid team, and you know Drummond is a legitimate force in this league. So at this point, I would be shocked if the Heat ended up making the playoffs, and I mean Heat fans should probably be upset if they did. But
I mean they were 11-30 like a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And now they're 27-33. It's like the last time we talked they were they're in the middle of that 13 game win streak, and then they lose it to Philly without Embiid. So I mean this team, I don't even know what to make of them. James Johnson's playing well, and that kind of represents everything. They're just just inconsistent, unpredictable. You never know what you're going to get. So I tend to agree with Dante that I think Detroit will be the eighth seed. I thought they would be fourth or fifth going into the season, and they've just been a huge disappointment. And
they've been unbelievably just kind of stagnated, because Reggie Jackson last year was really good. This year he's been really bad, to the point where they're benching him and trying to trade him. Drummond doesn't seem to have learned how to defend. No one's really having a career year on their team. Kentavious is playing just fine, but not better than last year. Morris is fine. Harris is fine. Johnson is fine. There's not really a big-time name that's really playing well for them, which is kind of embarrassing to say that they're the leading front-runner for that eighth seed in the East.
Yeah, I mean, they could have done a lot more, and I mean, Van Gundy's a fantastic coach, so I don't put it on him, but yeah, we've seen what happened with Jackson, and it just kind of snowballed from there, because that whole team is built around the high pick and roll with Jackson and Drummond. But I think they'll hang on at least, and they're not too far out of seven even. And I don't have faith in Chicago either. Like, that team is just as inconsistent. So I could see Chicago even falling to eight. But no matter what, I mean, whoever's playing Cleveland at the end of the day, it doesn't matter that much. I will say, though, the only two teams LeBron hasn't played in a playoff series are Miami and Cleveland. So we could get that Miami matchup finally.
That would be interesting. Or the Chicago one where he has to face Wade in the playoffs, and how their like kind of friendship is like while they're actually in a playoff series against each other, because that's never really happened. And then as we kind of finish up the East half of this show, what is there anything to be excited for if you're a Knicks fan, a 76ers fan, or a Magic fan?
Probably the most in Philly, right? I think
But that's with Embiid and Simmons being out for the year too, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, and it's somewhat sad, but at the same time, if you're Philly, you're kind of hoping that you push a little towards the bottom again. I think people can actually, you know, it's been said year after year, get excited, but next year really seems like the time to be an excited 76ers fan. I personally think they made the wrong move in trading Noel. I think that they chose the wrong big man if they were going to move anyone, and I also don't think that the deal was really that good because it's most likely going to roll over into two second round picks instead of being a late first one. So I think they didn't do a great job there, but overall, you consider what they could have next year. You look at Simmons, maybe a Malik Monk, Saric, who's really turned into his own type of figure there, and Embiid, obviously. Not to mention, I guess this could be. It's still an attractive free agent destination. I think looking at the other two, Orlando seems like it's a mess. People destroyed the deal that they just had, and the Knicks can't do anything right. So if I'm picking any of those three, it's definitely going to be Philly. But just to say, Charlotte is only one game better than them, and Milwaukee only two games better than New York. So, I mean, the middle to bottom of this Eastern Conference is kind of sad, but at the same time, at least if you're Philly, things are bright.
It's what we're used to, though.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Philly definitely, they have a bright future. I mean, there was a video of a kid in a Curry jersey at a Sixers game last night, actually, and he put on a Philly jersey, and someone captioned it, he bandwagoned the next great dynasty. So, so we know, I mean, yeah, they just need, I think they're well on their way to rebuilding. I agree that the Noel trade was a mistake. I mean, at least because they just didn't get enough value for him, and I don't think Okafor is a part of their future, but they're still on their way to another good draft pick, and their young core is definitely the best of those. I will say, though, Orlando, as bleak as it looks, Ross, I think, could really flourish there, and I don't think this Ibaka trade was as bad. I think more the acquisition of Ibaka in the first place was a mistake from the start, so that kind of makes it look worse than it really is. And, I mean, at least they got another first-round pick, and they admitted to their mistake instead of just letting it get worse as it goes on.
That's a very good point. And then, yeah, I agree with all of those points. And I think Aaron Gordon finally being able to play the four a little bit will be helpful for their development and how Frank Vogel looks as their future head coach. And then, last but not least, we have the Nets. And with that, we'll say goodbye to Lior.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's, you know, it's the Nets. I'm not terribly worried about the long run future. Obviously, in the short run, it's going to be a tough road. But I have a lot of faith in what's going on with the executives there and with Kenny Atkinson as the head coach. It seems like they have a plan, which is much better than whatever Billy King had in mind when he threw away the entirety of the Nets' future.
Tune in to NBA TV to hear Billy King give you some advice.
Yeah.
Before the trade deadline. I mean, yeah, I agree. Like, they have the infrastructure. They got a good coach. I think they got the right GM for them. I think it's just about, you can't undo that damage. It's going to take so long just because of how bad it is. I like that they're acquiring picks. They're trending in the right direction. I just think, I mean, they're the worst team in the NBA, and they don't own their own draft picks. I mean, you can't really get much worse than that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much more to say about that. It's a pretty bleak end to the Eastern Conference half of this show, but they are showing the right direction, not trying to just scrape out wins but with lousy veterans, but they're just trying to find pieces that maybe can fit into a role somewhere down the line and just have Brook Lopez kind of do all he can before his feet give out. Well, Lior, we appreciate you joining us, and this was fun. We'll have to have you on again soon, probably before the playoffs get rolling, to break down some more Eastern Conference basketball.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now let's transition over to the Western Conference, where I don't know how many more questions there are regarding that conference, just because for the most part things are kind of set in stone unless there's a surprise, which I think we kind of have to expect with the NBA nowadays. And we begin at the top, where the Warriors just clinched a playoff spot. They're at 50-9. Kevin Durant, if you're listening to this, someone in the near future, did hyperextend his knee, but I don't believe that to be too serious. So I think it's a little premature to overreact to it. And then we have the Spurs, who are 45-13 and 4.5 back, having a very good season in their own right for a non-historic team. So I don't know how much you have to say about these teams or what kind of questions you have, but just go ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to jump the gun on what we talk about, but just in considering these two, where they are, I think, you know, my biggest concern, at least for San Antonio, is having to play a really fast paced team in Oklahoma City, and that's since a lot of this is set in stone. Actually, well, it depends if OKC and Memphis switch, but it seems as if this might be the way it ends up, where Oklahoma City is in that seven spot, having to take on San Antonio in the first round. I think that concerns me a bit, just in what Oklahoma City was able to do at the deadline, just the way San Antonio is constructed. That's probably my biggest concern at the top.
Yeah, that's fair. I think if Memphis were to drop down to that seven, I think those two teams, San Antonio and Memphis, is just a very slow-paced series, and basically the Spurs are just a better version of what the Grizzlies have. And then as we do transition into the more middle part, I think Houston might be closer to the top tier than this middle tier. Is that how you feel, or do you think they're just somewhere in the middle in their own space?
Well, I think they definitely got better. I don't know if they got better in the right way by acquiring Lou Williams, but it's definitely a team to feel threatened by if you're a lower seed in the West, or even if you're a one or two seed in the West. They still have the probable MVP, in my opinion, with James Harden, and then they have a ton of shooters around him. So it's a team made to score, and. You know, whether they outscore their opponent is obviously the name of the game. So my only concern is that this team is very much reliant on free throws. And we've seen it in years past in the playoffs. You don't get those calls that you get in the regular season. And them combining three-point attempts and free throw attempts to make 100 is probably not going to happen in the playoffs. And that style of play is a little bit worrying if you're the Rockets.
I actually kind of like it if you're going against Golden State. I kind of attest to the Bill Simmons idea, where if you just chuck up enough threes and enough of them go in, you might have a chance at beating that team. Because I think the way that they're constructed, if you do get a little bit more, maybe you got someone who's a little bit better defensively than Lou Williams and not as good offensively, I don't think it moves the needle very much. But if you just have a bunch of guys who can just go out and score points, maybe you can just end up outscoring Golden State 4 out of 7 times. I know it's a little bit of a pipe dream, but that might be their best option in succeeding come playoff time.
Yeah, I mean, right now they average 115 points a game. That's an astonishing number, but Golden State is averaging 118. I don't know if Lou Williams was enough to really push this team ahead of either of those two. By season's end in some type of a series. I don't think they'll ever reach them in the regular season in terms of standings. But, what I think everyone is looking towards, what I think Utah and the Clippers as well are looking towards is these different types of matchups that they might have to face. How will they be able to change up their own style of play to beat an opponent and do what's necessary to win in a 7-game series.
Right, and I think Houston's probably pretty locked into the three, but yeah, those matchups are going to be crucial come playoff time. And when you do look at teams like Utah and the Clippers, I think that's probably the second most exciting race in this Western Conference, is who's going to end up nabbing the four and potentially a big home playoff game. Because the Clippers, fully healthy, are a very, very good regular season team. I know people certainly will have their concerns come the postseason and whether they even have a chance against Golden State, because they haven't shown it so far. But if they can get that home court advantage against Utah. I think that could be very important. And just overall, I kind of the Utah Clippers matchup just kind of really intrigues me, because you got the two big centers who were kind of battling for all-star spots, and then you have Hayward going against the weakest spot on the Clippers, and then you have the Paul Griffin, Doc Rivers, just how they're figuring things out and whether Griffin will be back to the point where he's been in the playoffs. I think there's just so many interesting storylines regarding how that matchup could go.
Yeah, the thing I'm surprised about is LA's unwillingness to land someone like PJ Tucker. I think there's been obvious glaring holes on this Clippers team for so long at that wing position, and it didn't really take much to get PJ Tucker from the Suns. I think when they look back at this season and what may come of it if they don't really advance in the playoffs, especially considering CP's a free agent after the season, they'll probably think back to the time that they let PJ Tucker go for Jared Sullinger's lunch tab and 2 second round picks. So I don't know. It seems weird to me that they weren't really interested in making any moves. I think the fact that a lot of these middle Western Conference teams didn't really try to push as hard as a team like Oklahoma City did is surprising and kind of bewildering.
I think they kind of made runs in the Clippers and the Jazz. The Jazz were kind of going after Lou a little bit. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just weren't offering enough. And then the Clippers, like you said, I think Tucker would have fit perfectly. A guy like Wilson Chandler would have been good. Gallinari would have been good. But I know both the Denver guys' asking prices were quite high, so maybe they just weren't willing to pay up. But that's rare for Doc Rivers, especially because he's usually willing to put up whatever picks are necessary, because he doesn't really care for them too much.
Yeah, I mean, he's always, I think, at least this is speaking from Doc's perspective, I think he's always been in markets that he's been assured at least a meeting with a free agent. He's kind of just been in a spot where the value of draft picks isn't as high, because he is in not only in attractive markets, but he's also usually in win-now markets, places that don't really tolerate losing. At least now the Clippers at the point that they're at, obviously prior to him, there wasn't much interest in winning. The middle of the pack, I think Utah is still the team for me that has one of the better shots of beating Golden State in a 7-game series, just in their pace, the way that they play defense. And of course, Quinn Snyder as a coach, I view very highly. So I think they could have used a little bit more on the offensive end, but they didn't get worse, right? So I think that's positive for them.
Yeah, and when you're talking about the Clippers, something that I just thought of come the offseason, what's stopping the Clippers from going out and signing someone before they sign Paul and Griffin? Don't they have both their bird rights, if I'm remembering correctly? Like, I feel like there's some CBA thing that I'm forgetting, that there's a reason why they can't go out and sign someone before they sign their other two guys.
Yeah, no, I think, I don't know if the most recent CBA changed anything about that. I think they're in a position to do that, but they also have to, you know, it's also not just those two. It's, you know, it's also JJ Redick, and it's also, you know, considering what some pretty big holes at that wing spot going forward. I think they could have gone away with even flipping Jamal Crawford for something that would have shored up that wing. But yeah, no, I think you're right. They do definitely have the opportunity to sign and keep building. But they would
balloon into a crazy amount of tax if that's the case. But I think Steve Ballmer.
The weird part about the NBA now is no one cares.
Yeah.
Everyone is above the tax except the teams that are willingly going below the floor. So we're at like a really weird spot in the NBA where like the team, there are these billionaire owners who really love winning, love competition, and they're willing to drop hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes just so that they can see their team win a few extra regular season games.
Yeah, it's a crazy time in the NBA, and I think that's one of the more under-talked about points across the league, just because there are so many storylines, and I don't think that one gets reported on near as much. And then we did touch on Memphis and Oklahoma City. I think that'll be a nice little race for the sixth seed. Maybe OKC feels better going against San Antonio or Houston or vice versa for Memphis. I think they will kind of be jockeying for position, and whatever Billy Donovan and whoever David Fizdale feels matches up best. So I don't think there's too much more there. And then as we move to the eighth seed, I think this is where things are kind of the most interesting for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that eight spot's very, very interesting. Obviously, the Ewing theory is in play with DeMarcus now out of Sacramento, even though that organization is a mess. I consider Dallas as a threat. I think they did get better at the deadline. They're still weirdly struggling. I think they, you know, that point guard hole still really, really does need to be filled. And I don't know if Yogi Ferrell is the answer or Quinn Cook. They just recently signed, but. It's a tight race between among a lot of iffy teams, or teams with very large holes. So, you know, whoever ends up filling that has to go through Golden State. So, I don't know. The benefit there, and we've talked about this before, is that they get two more games at home, that the owners get to make a little bit more money. People get to see maybe a little bit more of Damian Lillard or Jokic. But I don't know how much there is there to really worry about if you're Golden State.
Yeah, I don't think there's much of anything. I guess if Boogie and Davis end up figuring things out and are really clicking, that could maybe pose a small problem. But I think the amount of threes is going to be more than the twos the Pelicans can hit. And then Minnesota, I think, may as well just be dead in the water without LaVine. I don't think Wiggins and Towns have enough to carry them, although Thibodeau might starting to be getting things figured out. Dallas, as you said, you just got to rely on Carlisle being really good and how well Novell can fit next to Dirk. And then you have Portland, Sacramento, and Denver who are all just kind of fighting and scrapping for that spot. And they kind of seem like they actually do want it, just to try and get maybe some of the more young guys the chance at playing in the playoffs. But for Sacramento, there's a lot riding on this, because if they finish outside the top 10, then they move their pick to Chicago. And this is the final year that can actually be conveyed. So I think that's another thing to look forward to as this race heats up.
Just quickly going back to Dallas, do you think there is another big man in the league that fits better next to Dirk than Nerlens Noel? I think, you know, just considering offensively, Noel, it's someone who likes to go on high posts and bang up underneath. And defensively, he's someone that can race around the perimeter and guard the four. And leaving Dirk to kind of push around with the five. I just can't think of anyone that, I mean, obviously there are people like Anthony Davis, but for the price, I think Nerlens Noel was probably the best big man to put next to Dirk.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think he's the best gettable big man that they could have gotten. And he's young, and he's just entering restricted free agency, which kind of keeps his price tag lower than most big men. And I think he can develop even more once Dirk finally leaves, whenever that may come. And I when we were talking about Philadelphia, I was going to bring this up, but I think I like Justin Anderson a good amount, and I think him next to Simmons is going to be good. So I think that's a little interesting that they lost a little bit of wing depth, but I think it's overall obviously a great trade for them. But Anderson was a guy that I was pretty high on. And then as we transition out of good teams, and then we look at the bottom dropping out in Lakerland and the Suns, where the Lakers have to be inside the top three to get their pick. Otherwise, it goes to Philadelphia, and then Phoenix just being bad with their dynamic backcourt and their kind of developing front court, I guess you could say nicely.
I'm sorry, would say that again?
I was just talking about the bottom two teams in the West. You can't basically say anything.
Yeah, I think when you look at the Lakers, now they're kind of in a position to let their young kids run wild, letting Jordan Clarkson do whatever he wants off the bench. But both teams kind of remain somewhat of a mystery in what they're planning for the future. It seemed like the Lakers were, you know, not necessarily close, but at least in talks with Indiana to get Paul George. I don't know if that was going to be the right move right now. And Phoenix just hasn't had direction for quite some time. They've drafted a lot of lanky big men and aren't really necessarily pointing to anything fruitful for the future. So I don't know. I think they could have gotten a deal for Eric Bledsoe or something along those lines at the deadline. But both teams are kind of just there right now.
Yeah, they'll be battling along with the Magic and the Sixers for those 2, 3, 4, 5 spots in the lottery.
Just going to LA really quick. Just talking about Magic Johnson. Was that one of the more obvious things that was going to happen in the NBA as of late? I think, you know, they kind of all these news places set the stage. You know, Genie was meeting with Magic for dinner. He comes on as an advisor. I think if you look back a few months, Jim Buss had already said that he would step down if he didn't get the Lakers to a certain record that he thought was good for the team. I just thought that move was inevitable. That was gonna come, and I think, you know, honestly, I do think that Magic is gonna really thrive in that role.
I think you're not many people share that opinion with you. Most people think he's just a dummy based on just his tweets alone. But I think he'll do just fine. I think he's got a very nice landing spot with Walton in place, and I assume him and Magic are going to get along great. They seem very likewise in personality, and then they do have a solid young core, which we still aren't sure of, but I think he's in a nice little spot there. And he got a halfway decent deal for Lou Williams, and but my favorite part of that entire story is that Genie and Magic started talking once Phil and Genie broke up, which I just think is very funny in its own right.
Oh wow, that's a TMZ style angle on that situation.
Yes, it is.
I appreciate that. I do think that you know, even the team that he's put around him, obviously now he's got Palenka, who's a pretty successful agent. It seems like these are two guys in Magic and Palenka that are that'll at least get you in the room with some kind of star, just from the way they're able to sell people, the way they're, you know, they're able to showcase how wonderful a place LA is.
Well, and not only that, but just players alone just respect Magic so much, yeah, that they'll give a meeting to him, and maybe he'll be a great salesman, which I don't know how much he's had to do that, but I think he has potential.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest part. It's just, yeah, Magic seems like a guy that can sell you sand on a beach. You know, it's just it really does seem like he always had a positive outlook on things. Obviously, had so much success while being in LA, and just the ties there with both him and Walton. You know, it does seem nice for them going forward, even though they don't really have much direction.
Right, and we'll see how quickly they look to actually start winning games, and whether they can get in rooms with free agents this summer or next summer, or whether it's just about developing their young guys and whoever they may pick in this year's upcoming draft. I believe that's just about to do it. Real quick, if you had to pick someone for that 8 seed, who's your team?
I'm gonna go Portland. I'd probably say it's a toss-up between Portland and Dallas, both being just a game and a half, 2 games out. So right now I say Portland. Next week you can ask me and I'll probably say Dallas.
Fair enough. I'm going to go with either Denver or New Orleans. I think there's just too much talent on the floor in New Orleans for them to not start winning a few games. And then Denver, I think, will just stay where they're at. They're an interesting team who knows how to score the ball but doesn't like playing on the other end of the floor. And an interesting storyline for people who don't follow Denver basketball as closely is that Jameer Nelson is now the starting point guard ahead of Emmanuel Mudiay, which and they were readily a shopping Mudiay at the deadline. But I think that'll just about do it for us here at the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. We will be back in your ear holes in about a week. Who knows what'll happen in that time frame. We appreciate you all joining us. You can follow us on Twitter at Coast to Coast Pod. Both of our Twitter handles are there. You should go check out all the latest stuff on lastwordonprobasketball.com. I don't think there's any more plugs to give, but we appreciate everyone listening, and we will talk to you all later.